you and I got into something in the pre-show meeting, and we were going to play some of the Stefanski audio, but I don't think we really need to. If you listen to the press conference, it's the same tone, demeanor, and this is not a criticism of Kevin Stefanski, but Kevin is objectively, it is, you can tell he's not comfortable talking about this Deshaun Watson thing, especially now that we're back into the season again. And that begged the question whether you felt maybe it's time that you hear from somebody on this subject other than Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun Watson.
Right, and I think it is time for Andrew Berry or maybe even ownership to speak here, because this is something that when it is about the X's and the O's, like, do I believe Andrew Berry or Jimmy and D Haslam should speak for how poorly Deshaun Watson played on Sunday? No. I think that is firmly in Kevin Stefanski's arena. But when you have another allegation, especially when there are questions about whether or not the team knew about this allegation when the trade was made back a few years ago, I think that is something that should be addressed by somebody that is above Kevin Stefanski. I think it is unfair to him, and I understand that he signed off on this, and I totally get that, but I think he should not be the only one that has to address this every day. Somebody at some point when these allegations come out, other than Kevin Stefanski, should speak on this.
Well, and there's a two-parter here. We both agree that Kevin's not... I want to be gentle here because I can understand it's uncomfortable for him. Objectively, he's not good at it. So there's that part of it.
Well, he just wants to be boring. He doesn't want to be part of the story. He just wants to get it over with as quick as he can.
But that's every other answer that we have. Now you add it to this, and you can tell not only does he want to, like, short-step every answer, he also is uncomfortable in doing so. The other part is, this is how most NFL franchises work. Most NFL franchises, part of the money you're getting paid by a team is no different than Roger Goodell for the 32 owners. It is to be a meat shield for the team. But good organizations do this different. You know, I think there's this idea that, oh, good organizations don't make trades like Deshaun, or good organizations don't take risks, or, you know, on Mike Hall Jr. or Perrion Winfrey or anything like that. That's not true. We act as if in a vacuum, every team knows every single landmine that is out there, or that every team does perfect due diligence and we avoid those kind of guys. Every team is comfortable with a different kind of risk. But if you're going to be the team that does it to this degree, which I think the Browns do a little bit more than most teams, that's fine. But you have to, I think, be a little bit more sensitive and read the room a little bit instead of just a guy who's not going to say anything anyways going out there and repeating the same nothing that he's been saying now forever specific to the Deshaun situation.
I also think it's different when it's a quarterback versus another position. When it is somebody like Perrion Winfrey, when it is someone like Mike Hall Jr. who plays defensive tackle, not that those allegations are any less serious, but it means more to the franchise. It's going to be covered differently when, one, it is a quarterback who, if you are good, you are automatically the face of the franchise. Like, if Deshaun Watson were good, he would be the face of the Cleveland Browns. It doesn't matter how good Myles Garrett is. That matters. I also think it matters that this is not Deshaun Watson's first allegation. It's not Deshaun Watson's second, third, fourth. We could keep going on. There have been so many of these allegations. And when the question comes up, considering the contract, that whether or not the Browns knew about this is a very important question moving forward, I think at that point it becomes fair to expect somebody other than Kevin Stefanski to come talk about this.
I kind of feel like there's an all or nothing approach here. You either have to, if you're the Browns, you have to just hope that the quick pace cycle of not just a week, we're talking day to day with NFL news, how everything gets overshadowed so quickly. You either say, hey, we're going with Kevin and that's it, and Deshaun will talk, but we're going to try and curb those questions today. Their PR head, in the middle of questions about Deshaun's situation, said, we want to get back to football. Respectfully, I don't think that's the right way to handle that. Now, I'm not trying to tell somebody how to do their job.
Right.
I just think that's a really dangerous precedence to set where everyone can hear that, and that mentality. You can't control the message when this is the situation you've brought upon yourself. Again, I'm trying to say that as respectfully as I possibly can, which is new for me. But I do think, like, you either have to do that, which is we're just going to live with every time a new we're just going to do the cycle. A new allegation comes out, or new comment from Tony Busby, which came out today, or Rusty Harden comments on this, or some other NFL player. But and then we're okay, and Kevin's going to be asked about it, then Deshaun's going to be asked about it, then we're just going to ignore the hell out of it, and then we're going to wait for the next one to go. Or you need to do the thing that some people might look at is desperate, which is establish regular contact with Andrew Berry, who I think has been tremendous in his conversations about Deshaun's legal stuff and in the off-the-field stuff, and or the Haslams.
So I don't think that every time a new piece of information comes out, unless it, you know, gets more and more and more severe, that someone above Kevin Stefanski should have to speak to this. But when it's an entirely new subject, as this is, when it is a new allegation altogether, something that no one knew about, apparently, that's when I do think it should be somebody else. This isn't rehashing stuff from the past that's already been covered. We've not ever heard from Andrew Berry about this specific allegation because we hadn't heard about it until Monday. We have never heard from Jimmy and Dee Haslam about this specific allegation. All the other ones, I don't need to hear from Jimmy and Dee or Andrew Berry again, or really even Kevin Stefanski or Deshaun again. That's all done. But this, as far as I'm concerned, is brand new. It's brand new. I need to hear from somebody other than Kevin Stefanski because, and I don't want to say it's unfair because I don't think it is entirely unfair, but he's being sort of, the Browns are using him as sort of a meat shield here to where he's the one that has to go out and answer questions every single day that they're asked about this. And at a certain point, it should be somebody else.
So I agree with you. It shouldn't be every time there's a new piece of information like a Busby comment or something like that.
Right.
But I do think if you're going to have somebody that isn't Kevin doing this, I think you need to. You can't just come out this week and go, well, now Jimmy and Dee are going to talk, or now Andrew Berry's going to talk. You can't just do that once. You know, I think traditionally the rhythm that I think we've gotten into, maybe we'll hear from Andrew Berry after the trade deadline, right? Or leading up to the trade deadline.
The bye week.
You might hear from Jimmy and Dee in the similar time frame. You might hear from at the end of the season. Like, there are kind of beachheads already established. It wouldn't be the worst thing. And again, because I'll be honest, I'm a little bit Switzerland on this. I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just think you have to make a plan and stick with it. If it's just Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun have to bear the brunt of it, then you better stick to that as much as you possibly can and stick to the rest of your schedule. If it's other people have to be involved, then you have to say, hey, 4 weeks. So this week you're going to hear from Andrew Berry. 6 weeks from now, you're going to hear, like, you need to adjust the schedule so that it's not all on Kevin. Like, basically, you need to find a way to evenly distribute that weight other than just 1 week into this thing. Oh, hey. Yep, this is new. Here's where we're at. We'll talk to you again at the regular points.
But I don't think it's necessarily possible to put a set schedule because we don't know what the future is going to hold with this. There's no way to predict exactly how this is going to unfold. What we know is that there's a new allegation, and I believe that ownership or management should have to talk to the media about it. After that, it can be Kevin, but there needs to be somebody else that is a higher power than Kevin Stefanski on record about this. Early on, this could go away tomorrow. We don't know that. We don't know what's going to happen. But I think we need to hear before anything else happens from more powerful people with the Browns.
Drake, real quick here, because I know you have a point on this, buddy. But do you want to hear from somebody other than Kevin Stefanski or Deshaun Watson on the Deshaun situation, namely Andrew Berry or the Haslams?
I don't, because at the end of the day, I'm not bloodthirsty for all the information in this case. This case is going to handle itself. It's going to either be one way or it's going to be the other. Deshaun has proclaimed his innocence from the beginning. You can't shame him into saying, well, I need you to say something. He said something. And with his legal team saying, hey, please respect, he's going to concentrate on football, we're going to concentrate on the other side, and then come right to the press conference and you ask him 99 questions. Like, at the end of the day, you set yourself up
real quick, buddy, because I do want to give you a chance to say what you want to say. It is the media's job to ask about this. This is not a media creation. This is a very real situation involving the face of the Cleveland Browns. And I respect Deshaun because he has proclaimed his innocence. And so there's the legal component of this But I it sounds a little dismissive to what you're saying, at least when it comes to Deshaun having to speak to it.
No, you just said it. There's a legal component to this. So how can you expect him to get up and stand and tell you facts about what's going on when you just said there's a legal component to this?
It's not because he also is the face of a franchise and playing every week. So there's the legal component, and then there's the there's the legal component, and then there's the very real fact that you can't ignore any questions about the biggest story facing the face of your franchise, who's also embroiled in a and honestly, what people think is 13 games of bad football on top of it.
Right. So when you ask him a question and he says, "I can't answer that question. That's my legal team." Why get mad?
I think you're misunderstanding. I'm not getting mad at what Deshaun Watson said today. I respect that Deshaun Watson has to see this process through, and there are certain things Deshaun Watson cannot say publicly while this is going on. That's what it was the first time. That's what it is now. I want to know what the Cleveland Browns think of this, not what Deshaun Watson thinks of this. I want to know what Jimmy and Dee Haslam think of this, and I want to know what Andrew Berry thinks of this, not Deshaun Watson. I know he can't say things. I get that, and I respect that because that's how these things do work out with the legal process.
Definitely makes a lot of sense. I get what you're saying. On this side, it sounds like, hey, no matter what, somebody better come out and say something. And it's kind of touchy because no matter what you say, you either going to offend the women or you either going to down him. So it's touchy. You know what I'm saying? You kind of want the legal process to handle that for you, so we don't have to display our moral clauses all over the radio. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick up what you're putting down there. I think it's impossible to discuss the Deshaun situation without talking about the moral implications of what he's accused of. There's a big picture part of this, buddy. Like, whether or not the Browns, whether or not the NFL should allow this to continue on, which the NFL is content to as of right now, because they're just beginning their own investigation. So, it's almost like, because I hear what you're saying, but to ignore it, I think, would be disingenuous and callous in its own way, in a way that wouldn't be fair to anyone involved, even Deshaun himself, who has been accused and has the right to speak about publicly what he feels about it, even if it's just, hey, we've got a statement from my team, and that's where we're at.
Right. I just wanted to say one thing to Danny before you let me go.
Okay.
I'm the kind of guy that if a quarterback is injured, he gets more leeway after the injury is supposedly healed and rehab, and he plays a game. If he plays bad, he gets more leeway with me on that case. I don't understand the premise of you saying if he wasn't injured, he gets more leeway with that game when they're running a new offense. He's injured coming off an injury, and Deshaun Watson has only played 13 games. He hasn't even played a full season. So I'm lost with people saying, I'm tired of this. I'm tired. You just watched Baker play 15 games and sabotage the whole season. The whole town paraded around for Johnny Manziel that he was garbage. So now all of a sudden, it's like we've been watching this great quarterback play from the Browns for the last 20 years. Where?
Drake, we appreciate you. Thanks, buddy.
I don't understand what any of the previous quarterbacks had to do with this. And I don't recall saying that I'm giving him less leeway because he got injured. I have less hope for him because he got injured. But that doesn't mean I'm giving him, if anything, my standard for him week one was lower because of the injury, and he still didn't meet that.
Also, if we're going to take a shot at Baker for playing hurt and not playing well enough and sinking a season, it's now 3 years with Deshaun doing the same thing.
Yes.
I mean, I've been cast as this Deshaun apologist, but I mean, if we're going to do the math, you're pissed about 15 games with Baker that has nothing to do with the conversation we were just having.
And Johnny Manziel, where'd that come from?
And then I think he was saying Baker was masquerading as Johnny Manziel, which I think is just not in concert.
Oh, I thought he was saying Johnny Manziel tanked seasons, which, to be fair, is true and has nothing to do with Deshaun Watson at all.
In fairness, Johnny also tended to tank his own life. So it wasn't just a season or a career. It was a lot of things with Johnny. I think it's been interesting to watch people come unglued, watching Baker have a great game week one. And I think it was Sumer Sports had the stat that Baker had of their they've got basically FAI, which is football AI that grades out every performance. And of all quarterbacks, Baker had the best FAI, I'm getting used to that acronym, that score by Sumer Sports, and the worst was Deshaun Watson. And it's wild to watch people come unglued at his success as part of this conversation.
And I mean, it looked like it on Sunday. Deshaun Watson looked like the worst quarterback in football, and Baker looked like the best. But I don't think that the two should be as tied to the hip as a lot of people are making it seem.
Mm-hmm.
The Baker era was so long ago. And when we talk about Baker now, we forget, Nick, about how bad it was at the end here, where Baker was ready to be done with Cleveland. Cleveland, for the most part, was ready to be done with Baker. It got really bad. That last season of Baker here was terrible. The Browns, I thought moving on from Baker was the right move. I still feel that way, despite seeing him have some success. Last year, I thought he was a solid quarterback. Obviously, he was awesome on Sunday, but he also he did it against maybe the worst team in football, at least a bottom five team in football in the Commandos, right? That's a fair thing to say, I think, too.
Are we going with the Commandos?
Or Commies, whatever you want.
I mean, you just call them Commanders.
No.
Or Washington?
No.
Washington, like, listen, maybe. I'm Team Gardos, so who am I to talk?
Nobody.
I just, the Commandos, there's just such a specific...
Had you not heard that before?
I'd heard it, but nobody's ever said it on air with me, and it stopped me in my tracks a little bit.
Well,
but
welcome
continue
to the show, yeah.
Continue about the Commandos.
Well, I mean, they're bad, and yeah. Obviously Baker had a great game, and Mike Evans is awesome, too, but we forget what Baker went through to get back to being somebody that people could believe in again, because in 2020... He had like 6 or 8 really good games for the Browns. He was very, very good, genuinely, down the stretch of that season. And he got hurt, and he lost himself. 2021, he was awful. 2022, he was so bad that the team that traded for him cut him. The Carolina Panthers decided, it is better for you to not play for us than play for us. That is the point that his career got to. He had a good game with the Rams and then wasn't very good after that. He needed to go through quite a journey, I think, probably physically, but certainly mentally, to get back to being someone that even resembled a franchise quarterback. The Browns didn't make the right decision clearly in going after Deshaun Watson, but that doesn't mean the Baker Mayfield stuff was the wrong decision to move on from him, because they didn't have the 2 years that it took, 2.5 years that it took for Baker Mayfield. They didn't have that time to wait. They had maybe a year, and that wasn't enough for Baker.
So you think that Baker, the situation with Baker, coming off 2021, would replicate itself the way it went in Carolina, LA, and Tampa if they had kept Baker and not traded for Deshaun?
I think that he needed a change of scenery. I think that there was pretty clearly, go back and watch the final game Baker played in Cleveland. It's a Monday night game. It was the Ben Roethlisberger love fest on ESPN. It was awful to watch, but go watch how Baker looked there. To me, that very clearly looked like somebody that had a major rift with the coach and the organization. I don't think that rift was getting fixed. I think Baker needed a wake-up call. I think going to Carolina and having it not work out there, not work when he went to a different city, a different team, and was just as bad, if not worse, away from Kevin Stefanski and the Browns when he was off the leash, I think that was a wake-up call he needed.
I disagree on a few levels.
Okay.
One, the Carolina situation, you had the worst head coach in the NFL at that point, Matt Rhule. You could not have put Baker into a worse situation. They also cut him because he had an opportunity in L.A. And of the things that they have done poorly in Carolina, they actually did right by Baker and gave him – they approached him saying, we can't make a trade. It's past the deadline. L.A. needs a quarterback. You're not going to be here next year. Would you like to have a settlement that you can go there?
Sure.
So – also, I'll be honest with you, I think you absolve the Browns of a lot, because I think everything with Baker was salvageable. You're right to say that last game of the season that he played in 2021, it was as low as it had been, which is saying something considering everything Baker had been previously, including the 2019 season with Freddie Kitchens. But I think almost anything can be fixed with good leadership.
Sure.
In the NFL. It's why guys have contentious and, you know, huge quarrels with their franchise, and then everybody kind of cooler heads prevail, and, oh, we're kind of married to each other. Let's go figure this out together.
Sure.
So I agree that I do think inevitably struggles are good for everyone. They are, because you learn a lot about yourself, and you become – if you really take failure to heart or struggles to heart – it's impossible to not come through them as a more human person or a better person, as it were. The Browns delivered the fatal blow. if the Browns, before they even agreed to a deal with Deshaun, if the phrase adult in the room never enters the lexicon, you could have saved things with Baker. And I think that's where I think this idea of, because here's what's happened. It was one bad year. And by the way, it was one bad year playing through a shoulder injury.
That he should not have been playing through.
Okay, but my point is.
Admittedly, he did admit that.
My point is, good leadership could have said, sit your ass on the bench. We're going to put somebody else out there.
I think that's what leadership wanted, but we are in a league where the players have the power there.
No. And this goes back to the Deshaun thing on Sunday. Well, I asked Deshaun if he wanted to play, and he said yes, so I didn't take him out of the game. Who's the head coach? I'm not trying to get anyone to be Bill Parcells here. But I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm not trying to do this because I'm not trying to weaponize this guy against Kevin. I think Kevin's a good head coach. But I do think that this area, the leadership or dealing with difficult personalities, which is what elite head coaches have to do. And Kevin has not proven this to me yet. This is probably the final thing that I need to see from Kevin to really go, and I'm a Kevin Stefanski guy. I'll tell you right damn now. Mike Vrabel, if Mike Vrabel wanted to pull Deshaun's ass on Sunday, if he was head coach, Deshaun would have been sitting on the bench. And so I'm not, you don't need to be, you can be a, hey, if I think, because honestly, I don't care about him staying in the game because I agree you and I are on the same page. He needed more reps. That's
right,
fine.
Yeah.
But it's you can't, no, who's the head coach? Who makes the decision? And I understand that players do have more power. They don't have the final say. That's what the head coach is there for. So Kevin Stefanski, even in year two here, should have had the cojones to say to him, you're hurting the team. I need you to listen on this. We need to take care of you. He is the adult in the room. The idea that Baker is the only guy that has to be the adult in the room is wildly one-sided.
Do you remember what happened when Kevin Stefanski did do that?
Which part?
When Baker missed a week?
No.
And Baker ran immediately to Jay Glazer?
So
that happens every time, but the Browns didn't want that message out there. That is why they didn't do that, because Baker couldn't handle that. And we can talk about how, you know,
so
struggles can be good
control.
For everybody.
I'm talking about
Baker as a player. I'm talking about Baker as a player here and Baker as a person too. And mm-hmm. I think Baker would probably agree that the younger version of Baker Mayfield that was in Cleveland, pretty hard-headed. I don't think that's an unfair thing to say. Pretty stubborn guy, pretty fiery guy. That can be very good at times. That can be harmful to yourself at times. In this situation, I think it is something that was harmful to himself. I think if the Browns say, especially when a doctor says, no, you can play, and the Browns say, you're not what's best for us, that destroys the relationship right there. I don't think at that point, and we know the relationship got to a point where it was untenable, but I think it gets there much earlier if they sit him down that year.
I think that is a convenient out for a franchise that has not shown me that they can handle difficult personalities.
I think it's the truth.
But I think that's not an I know.
I mean, so is yours.
But my point is, like we're speaking with conviction on this. The reason why it does matter that Baker and Deshaun will be because the Browns declared themselves desperate. Their messaging to everyone was, this guy ain't it. We have to level up. We don't trust this guy. We need an adult in the room. And then you turn around and trade for somebody and act desperate. Let's be real honest here. If you had submitted your best plea to Deshaun, and let's just say, or your best agreement to Deshaun, and Deshaun says no. Okay. He said no.
Yeah.
Or Deshaun says yes. All right. Then he chose you on the merits of the deal. That's not what happened. The Browns acted in desperation. They had backed themselves into the corner with one option. They weren't drafting a quarterback. They weren't bringing in Kirk Cousins. There was no other move. Either you save it with Baker or you run with Deshaun and you overextend yourself with Deshaun. They chose to do that in a situation they weren't and shouldn't have been desperate. That is the thing. That is why. If it had been a logical conclusion and it had been more one-sided than I think it really was, I totally get it. It wasn't. The Browns failed in their relationship, and they used the most convenient out in history, which is, I didn't draft the guy. Not my problem. And so everything that has come to that has absolutely been, and I'm not trying to be unfair, but I'm just trying to be demonstrative, and I'm trying to be real about this. Everything that has come with this has been reaping what the Browns have sowed because they acted desperate in a situation they should not have been desperate. And some of that, not all of that, some of that is ego. Some of that is, well, I'm not going back to Baker Mayfield and saying, hey, man, things got out of control. We're sorry. Will you own your side of the street if we own ours? That's why it's not as convenient as, well, the Deshaun trade and the Baker trade, they're not linked to each other. Oh, they're linked to each other forever.
But I'm saying that the way Baker plays now is not linked to the Browns because of everything else he had to go through to get to where he is.
But and the Browns I helped him think, do that. The Browns helped
and
him on the
so
path to hardship.
And so did two other teams. It's not as if it's... The way it gets painted is he left the Browns and he's awesome. That's not at all the story here.
He had one
he
bad
left
year.
The Browns and was worse, if just as bad, if not worse, when
year.
He left the Browns. And then was okay to good down the back stretch of last year against the worst division in football.
I think that's being overly critical of a guy
I don't
who had
think
his
so.
Best season of his career last year.
I think he was okay and played well down the stretch against the best of it, or against the worst division in football.
I can say that about Joe Burrow's three best seasons.
That's fine. Let's talk bad
hell.
About him, too. I'm good doing that.
He was mid as hell for the first 8 weeks, and down the stretch, he played his best football. That's exactly when a franchise quarterback should play their best football.
Yeah, but he didn't do it against the worst division in football.
216-474-0092. Baker Mayfield doing okay in Tampa there. How much of your view on the Deshaun trade is based on Baker's performance? You and I are not too far different in how we think of things as it pertains to this. I just think, I feel like I've seen a trend of that guy-ism from the Browns organization. And this is a gent, because so many things are night and day better than they were in 2019.
Oh my gosh.
But I can't help address the thing that I do think is plagued, that can be plagued by leadership. And not leadership issues, but where leadership could be better. And those are two, they had leadership issues for 20 years. Now I just think it can be taken up a notch. And how they handle the Deshaun thing is part of that. How they handle the Mike Hall Jr. thing. If you can button these things up, you're not that far from being the organization that you want to be. You really aren't. But specific to the Baker thing, Baker was the fall guy. He had a bad season under Stefanski and Barry, and it was immediately turned the table. And the reason why it matters is I think it had as much to do with Baker the person than it did Baker the football player. And in the end, you worked yourself into a chute, in the parlance of Ken Carmen, to then go to Deshaun Watson, who on no level has brought the thing, any of the things. The one thing that you can say about Baker is the juxtaposition between him and Stefanski. Stefanski's not the guy when you know what's in the tank. He's not the guy that's going to lead the men up the hill and out into the open field. That is Baker. And they don't have that guy now.
Right.
And so that is another way in which there's no way you can differentiate or separate the Baker. Like, they, because of the situation, some of it's on Baker, some of it's on them, that everybody was backed into, that led to them being desperate in a situation they shouldn't have been desperate in.
Right, and I do wonder if Baker's stubbornness wasn't as extreme. Like, say that Baker decides that after Anthony Schwartz stops running a route and Baker makes a tackle and dislocates his shoulder, let's say he says, you know what, I can't do this. I'm hurting the team. I need to have surgery. What do the Browns look like right now? Is Baker still on the roster now? I think there's a pretty good chance that he is.
Yeah.
Because that contract extension that he wanted wasn't going to be as lucrative. Fairly so. The Browns were going to be able to pay him a number. I think that they were more comfortable paying him than the number that he wanted. So I think that changes the way this team looks pretty drastically. And then to get to the leadership thing, you are right about that with Kevin Stefanski. I think it's a little bit overblown. I think he's a better leader than he's given credit for. But the other way that I look at this, in today's NFL, it needs to be that specific leadership quality, the leading through tough times. As you mentioned, Baker is the guy that can do that in certain situations. I think it needs to be a player-led thing. And I don't think it's not just a quarterback thing. It needs to be something that star players can do. Because you can say that Deshaun doesn't do that. You can say that fairly. Can you say that about Myles Garrett? You might be able to. You might be able to say maybe he's not the best leader in the world. I think that is more of a player-specific thing that Baker could solve that problem. Sure. But I think the other issue is that there's not anybody on the Browns right now that I'm confident solves the problem. I look at the players for that.
So I do think that it is a problem that they don't have the players that are that kind of leader.
Sure.
I think in the same way that I think 30 years ago, if you thought the only way a good head coach is going to be a good head coach is if they're rah-rah or if they're, you know, players are scared bleepless of them, I think you'd be wrong. I think there's been this overcorrection to, well, the head coach doesn't need to be a leader anymore because the league has changed. This is not the NBA. The league has not changed that much. Yes, players do talk more. Players have more power. And I am for that. At the same point, you don't have to choose between being a rah-rah leader and any form of leader. Like, I think the principal thing of leadership is, can you be the thing, can you be the Swiss Army knife that, hey, this might not be native to how I naturally am, but this is something missing from this team. This is something missing from this organization, and somebody's got to do it. If I don't do it, nobody will. And I think that's where, like, I do think Kevin's a good communicator, and that is a part of leadership. But at some point, liking people is not enough.
Right. When what I think, where you lose me with that is, when you ask someone to be, especially if it's a coach, say you ask Kevin Stefanski to be someone he's not, the players can see that. And that's when I think players lose trust and they lose respect for that leadership position, when that person is trying to be something they're clearly not.
You have to, Mike Vrabel.
No, I know you're not. But if you're asking him to fill a role that he is not authentically himself in, what players want is for coaches to be themselves. Would it be great if Kevin Stefanski had a little bit more of that in him? Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. But I don't want him to go out and try and fake it, because that, I think, is something that is easily seen through in the locker room. I think that's how you lose locker rooms in professional sports.